Hi, everybody. Today is Sunday, July 6, 2025, and our friend Pepe Escobar from Rio de Janeiro is back with us. Welcome to Brazil, Pepe.
Wonderful to talk to you, Nima, from Brazil. And all of you, our audience, this is the Copacabana Palace swimming pool in the back. This is my office, not that horrible cage that they set up at the Modern Art Museum during breaks. It's much better to work from here. I get a lot of information, messages, telegram. I can call anybody and all that. And over there, they tell me it's horrible. It's zillions of journalists in a huge cage, and you have access to nothing. So, you know, here's perfect. I just had my lunch here. I have drinks. And people are going to join me later. And it's great to talk to you, Nima, from here, from Rio, and of course, from the first day of the BRICS Summit.
Então, vamos começar com BRICS Summit and the importance of BRICS Summit. I just shifted to Portuguese.
I noticed right away.
To honor BRICS here in Brazil.
Maybe you should come here and we go to the swimming pool together.
Pepe, let's start with what happened in BRICS. And we know that one of the main concerns on the part of BRICS and BRICS nations is the situation with tariffs. And because the United States, since Donald Trump took office in the United States, and he decided to put tariffs on each and every nation on Earth, on this planet. Yes. What is the policy of BRICS? What did they talk about it?
Of course they did. Okay, let me check, because the summit declaration came out, I think, 1 hour before our conversation. I haven't read it yet because it's very, very long. But okay, I'll try to summarize for all of you who are following us live, in fact, some of the most important political and geoeconomic points. Very important. BRICS, their own language in the final declaration. BRICS has serious concerns about the rise of unilateral tariffs. Obviously, they would not name the US in a BRICS declaration. They have to proceed very cautiously. But obviously, with the discussions that we had here, with diplomats, delegates, and business representatives from absolutely everywhere, including the BRICS partners as well, there's got to be a concerted BRICS reaction to the unilateral tariffs. So this is an absolute consensus on BRICS. No particulars yet how they're going to do that, but at least they are on the same wavelengths. Some other important political points. They condemn the military strikes against Iran. That's not strong enough. What we heard from Iranian diplomats, and I tried to get this from other delegations as well, is that Iran wanted a very, very forceful condemnation. This is not strong enough, Nima, seriously, just to condemn the military strikes. Mm-hmm. Well, but we can imagine this was a very, very hardcore discussion, of course. But at least the condemnation is there. Just like the condemnation against the terrorist Ukrainian terrorist act against Bryansk, Kursk. Oh, my God. Now they started. Is it too loud, the sound in the background?
Yeah. No, it's gone right now.
The sound in the background. Bands are playing.
It comes in, and it's not that much, but.
But can you hear me at least?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Okay, thank you. Great. So they condemn the attacks on Bryansk and the rail, the bridge and the rail in Kursk as well. Of course, the Russians made the point that this had to be in the final declaration. They welcome Indonesia as a full BRICS member. That's very, very good. And they call for an unconditional Gaza ceasefire, which we were expecting. It's the least they could do. So as you can see, they have to be very generalistic in a summit, in a final declaration. there was a lot of debate on two points specifically. One is the condemnation of Israel and Iran for the double war by Israel and US against Iran. But in the end, the Iranians were, let's say, relatively satisfied with the final language. And of course, Russia and China, very forceful on the geoeconomic aspects. If I had to summarize, Nima, so far, what was the most important discussion in this previous 2 days, especially, yesterday was the Business Council meeting. Very, very important. This was really the most important meeting of them all. Much more important than the NDB meeting. The NDB meeting was, to tell you the truth, a bit of a mess. You know, over 2 days in a huge hotel nearby. Dilma was there, Lula was there the first day. But like our friend Paulo Nogueira Batista, with whom I shared a panel earlier this week here in Rio. So he's one of the co-founders of the NDB. So he can be very critical of the way the NDB works from the inside. And the fact that President Dilma Rousseff now has her second mandate, there's one positive point, which is continuity. And the fact that because she has soft power, her name, her brand, you know, transposed to the NDB adds to the cachet and the swing of the NDB. But that's not enough because they need a structural reform. And so far, considering what they discussed here in Rio this week, I'm not sure this structural reform is coming anytime soon. But the most important thing, which once again I want to go back with all of you, is Siluanov, the Russian Minister of Finance. The Russian delegation, by the way, is the second biggest delegation here. Very, very important. Lots of heavyweights, like, you know, executives from Rostec, which basically coordinates the weapons industry in Russia, from Rosatom, nuclear power, from different branches of the government, Sergei Ryabkov, deputy foreign minister, and of course, our grandmaster Lavrov, who was on the table today, early this morning with Lula and the other heads of state. Siluanov said something immensely important, which I'll try to quote him verbatim, in fact. Let me just find it first. Just a second, all of you. In fact, I wrote a post about it, and I called my post Bye Bye Swift. Because this is what the Russians, as the number one geoeconomic driver of the BRICS agenda, this is what they are striving towards, in fact. Siluanov said, okay, I'll give you this, the number one quote by Siluanov himself.
Pepe.
Yes.
Can you move to some other places that
are... No, that's the problem. I can't because this thing is very loud and this is the farthest away that I am from the music. So I'll try to speak very close to the microphone so you can hear me.
Okay.
I know, it's terrible. It's Sunday. Lots of tourists, so they have to play these things. Okay. Very, very important. Siluanov, he's in his own words. The new development bank, NDB, can become BRICS cross-border settlement hub. This is absolutely key because this is a direct, straight to the point, sanctioned proof alternative to SWIFT. And the Russians have been testing models about that since last year, way before the Kazan summit, even during the preparation of the Kazan summit. You know. So the NDB, according to Siluanov, they can provide loan guarantees for all sorts of mega infrastructure projects all across the BRICS sphere, It can be in Iran, for instance. It can be in Nigeria. It can be in Indonesia. So then the NDB is going to start to work as a real alternative to the World Bank, which for the moment it's not. The NDB has only 10 members. You cannot have a global bank with only 10 members. So they need to expand, and this is the way to go. Well, very, very important. All the BRICS members, they ratified this move of having the NDB being, let's say, an NDB on steroids, which is what they need at the moment. The next step, technical step, they're going to organize a working group. That's how BRICS works. You have working groups for every issue. And Silvanov said this is just a formality, in fact. So I would say, Nima, that this was the most important geoeconomic development, even considering tomorrow. Tomorrow, there's not going to be a lot because the final declaration was already issued less than 2 hours ago. So this is the key. Geoeconomically, BRICS cannot advance without Russia at the driving seat. And at least this is proved. And the fact that they sent an absolutely first-class, ultra-heavy delegation to the summit proves how Russia is taking this all very, very seriously. And the fact that this was endorsed by all the BRICS members, it's a very, very good sign.
Russia participated in this summit, sending foreign minister of Russia.
Yes.
And what was the message? It seems that we had a video message from Vladimir Putin.
Yes, Putin's, yes. What Putin said online, let's say Putin on Zoom with Rio or on StreamYard, nothing out of the ordinary. He basically congratulated all the members and the new members and the partners, of course. BRICS is growing. It's already way ahead of G7. He didn't get into particulars because he knew that his delegation here will be discussing all these particular issues. Like Maxim Overshuk was here, and we talked to him briefly yesterday after the BRICS Business Council. Very, very important. He's one of the top, I would say he's one of the top three direct Putin advisors, economic advisors. So it's very, so they took it very, very seriously, Nima and all of our audience. So all this nonsense that you see on Western mainstream media, I took 5 minutes of my time to take a look at headlines everywhere. Oh, this BRICS summit is not important because Putin and Xi Jinping are not coming. They snubbed the summit. The usual bullshit that you expect from these people, right? And I discussed this with the Chinese. By the way, another huge delegation. And we lots of very, very crucial Chinese academics on the sidelines. We had, for instance, earlier this week, we had one dinner with the people from the Beijing Club. And on the next day, we had a closed section at PUC University here in Rio, one of the best universities in Brazil, with the people from the Beijing Club, intellectuals from Tsinghua University, from the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, Brazilians, South Africans, and well, and the discussion, Nima, at the highest level. So they sent some of their best academics. Very, very important. And it's very funny, when on the sidelines, when we're talking more informally after dinner, for instance, they say, yeah, there were a few reasons why Xi Jinping didn't come. And apparently, the most significant is that all the major issues they had already discussed in person, Xi and Lula, in this previous two previous visits by Lula to China. So there was no need for Xi to come here again, you know. Baby. And of course, the premier and the Chinese delegation is more than capable to discuss this, and they did. And the meeting between the Chinese premier Li Qiang and Lula. Once again, the Chinese saying, look, we will continue to invest all over the place in Brazil, just like we have been doing. like, you know, that BYD factory in Bahia, for instance, which is enormous. And there are probably going to be many more as well.
Gigantic.
Yeah, gigantic. As you know, Nima. So commercial trade relations, Brazil, China, they only tend to grow. In parallel with all that, Modi is here because Modi is interested in a strategic partnership with Brazil as well. He doesn't want to be left behind by China. So he brought, once again, an enormous Indian delegation. So India is probably going to start to do serious business in Brazil from now on. We still don't have the details. But the fact that Modi came here, he has a very good relationship with Lula. So there's going to be a lot of, let's say, cross-border investment in India-Brazil from now on as well. So from a geoeconomic point of view, a trade point of view, a huge success. From a political point of view, even if we don't have some of the top leaders, it doesn't matter. Because BRICS is not only about personal relationships, it's a process. And people like, for instance, these Chinese academics, Orishuk, Silvanov, they understand this very, very well. And the Indians that I talked to at the Business Council yesterday, same thing. The Business Council yesterday was something extraordinary. I was very, very impressed. You could network, Nima and all of you, with literally 50-60% of the global South. Egyptians, South Africans, Nigerians, everybody was a Malaysians. The speech by Malaysian Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim at the beginning, it was the last speech at the start of the session. Wow, was a killer. Was as good as the one that he gave in Russia last year. Anwar is one of the best diplomats in the world and one of the most capable heads of state in the world. And he said, look, BRICS from now on, we are now going towards beyond cruise velocity. We are really taking off and then we are picking up speed. And the room was like, people were like, wow. I think many of them have never seen Anwar in person. And he's very good live, you know. So this was excellent. And Lula made a promise, which is was quite startling. And I understand why, and I see an enormous potential. He's going to the ASEAN summit in October in Malaysia, chaired by Malaysia. So this could be the beginning of Brazil and parts of South America, much closer trade relationship with all those powerhouses in Southeast Asia, Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia, of course, and Vietnam, which are full members like Indonesia or partners like the other three. So these are all I'm talking about all the positives because I am a little bit fed up of having so much negative coverage by stupid Western mainstream media. So we need to debunk these people. We were talking about Western mainstream media in one of the media discussions that we had. You know, it's so much stuff. I think it was the day before, 2 days ago. In Niterói, across the bay from here in Rio. And including the possibility of, let's try to start working on a project that will be a sort of multimedia, cross-border media, trans-BRICS organization. Could be a public, a private partnership, how to define who's going to edit all that. But the Global South needs their own media environment and their own sources of information without depending on the Global North and especially the Americas. We discussed a lot big tech, of course, and how they plan to use artificial intelligence to control information even more, single narrative. So, these 3 days before the beginning of the summit, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, they were great because we discussed literally everything. And the delegates from everywhere, especially yesterday, where all the business delegates were together yesterday, they were very, very enthusiastic about the possibilities. It's like the beginning of a long road trip, Nima. And you could see that people are really engaged. They have wonderful projects, stuff that I never heard about. They were talking in every possible area, in sustainable development, energy, everything, agriculture, fisheries, you name it. So these are all the positive aspects, which obviously you're not going to see and you're not going to read on Western mainstream media. And you have to be here for it. And the fact that this happened in Rio this year, especially when there were not a lot of high expectations about the summit. This went beyond all expectations. And then we have to go back, of course, to the final declaration, read it in detail, and continue the discussion about, in fact, what the final declaration did not say explicitly, which is the most important part.
Pepe, you mentioned the case of SWIFT system and how they're going to somehow find a solution for that, and those countries cannot use the SWIFT. But is that going to be a solution in the near future? How do they see it in the future? Is that soon?
It's the beginning of once again, Nima. It's the beginning of a long trip. Silvanov, he did not say emphatically. He said may become the role of the NDB. Because he knows that a structural reform to make the NDB much more dynamic and sharp is essential. Dilma herself did not touch on this in detail. We hope maybe to have a private conversation with President Dilma after the end of the summit. And Dilma doesn't like, she always keeps her cards very close to her chest. So I wonder what she would be willing to say about it. But the fact that the Russians and the Chinese trust her at the head of the NDB is already enormous in terms of political capital and for her to drive this revamping of the NDB. But we can say that compared to last year, they are already the first few steps towards, in the long run, de-dollarization. The BRICS, they need to have their own credit rating system, their own system of payment, settlement, payment, settling payments all across the board. It has to be their own. And they have to use their own currencies more and more, which is something that was part of Putin's speech from online. He emphasized that the road ahead is payments, settlements, and trade in our own currencies. And everybody knows that. It's a mega consensus on BRICS. But everybody also knows that this is a very long process. And they couldn't have, for instance, a final statement here clashing directly with Trump 2.0. Everybody knows that. I would say, the closed-door discussions bilaterally, of course, this was, if probably was the number one thing. How are we going to react as a group against this tariff dementia by the empire? This was more or less reflected in the final declaration, but in a very subtle way. So now we're going to expect what? More and more cross-border trade in their own currencies and more integration, transcontinental integration. Once again, that's the importance of this Lula trip in October to ASEAN to talk to the 10 members of ASEAN who are their main trade partner, guess, is China. Brazil, their main trade partner, is China. So it's logical to have Brazil as a trade giant in South America integrating more with the Southeast Asians. But once again, Nima, it's and all of you in the audience, this is a very long process, but we have reasons to be cheerful that they discuss this here very, very seriously.
Pepe, what we know about Saudi Arabia? Last time we checked, we don't
not
know
much.
Did they talk about Saudi Arabia?
No. The Emirates are here. And Saudi Arabia, you know, I didn't see many people from Saudi Arabia, to tell you the truth. There's a huge delegation from the Emirates as well. Saudi Arabia, they remain on the fence. We all know that. They said that they would love to join, but they haven't. So, you know, they participated in some meetings this year, and some they didn't even bother to go. So it's complicated. It's just like Turkey. Turkey received an invitation last year. They didn't respond. And then you go to Erdogan-aligned Turkish media. They said, we want to keep our channels of communication with BRICS open. What channels of communication? You're not even talking.
Yeah, well, there's so much unbelievable the behavior of Erdogan and Pepe. But the case of Indonesia is somehow big and important. And I think it's Malaysia, Indonesia. If you bring these nations into BRICS, that would be a game changer. That would be something big to achieve. And how do they know when Indonesia is going to join officially BRICS, when they're going to be part of BRICS officially?
Indonesia is already a full member, Anima.
But
they were welcomed. Okay, just a second. Let me find it again. They were welcomed officially by everybody as a full member.
Full.
Yes, the other three Southeast Asians, they are partners. Malaysia, Thailand, and Vietnam. Vietnam is the latest one. Welcome a few days ago. I think it was early this week, in fact. But Indonesia is a full member. Prabowo is here. Prabowo was one of the top guests here. And this approximation between Brazil and Southeast Asia, this is immensely important. And the bridge was Anwar. And it was great because at the business council, the guest of honor, foreign guest of honor, there was only one. Anwar from Malaysia. So this was obviously the Brazilian government said, no, this is our guy, and he is going to introduce us to Southeast Asia. Fantastic. Excellent. Brazil has, of course, good relations with Vietnam, good relations with Thailand, Singapore. But to have a guy of Anwar's stature to be the bridge and introduce Brazilian business people and Southeast Asian business people is invaluable. Let me try to find their official welcome to Indonesia. Just a second, Nima. It's part of the official declaration. Yes, in the official declaration, one of the first paragraphs, we welcome Indonesia as a BRICS member. Meaning full BRICS member. And Iran. Very, very important. There was a lot of blah, blah, blah that the Iranians were not, they were blocking the final text of the summit declaration. Bullshit. They wanted the language to be more forceful. And then, of course, they understood that considering this is U.S. and Israel, you have to proceed very diplomatically. The Brazilians were basically telling the Iranians, look, we would like to, but we cannot, because then it will compromise all of us. So in the end, the fact that they condemned the military strikes against Iran is, let's say, halfway. But it's better than nothing, considering the volatility of the situation, right? In many of the discussions, business discussions at the business forum, and today in some of the speeches, the theme of the empire going out of control was always there, but it was never named. Very, very important. It has to be discreet. And some of the BRICS members, they are excellent diplomatically in dribbling this whole thing, you know, China, Indonesia, Malaysia as a partner as well. So it was a clever way of putting it, but they made it very, very clear. We are against all that, and we're going to fight it.
And you mentioned about the unconditional Gaza ceasefire. They're asking for...
Yes. They didn't get into it. Apparently, they didn't get into a lot of details. Lula, for instance... That's complicated. Lula, in his speech this morning, which was the inaugural speech of the opening session, it's the president, the chair, right, was Lula. He was not forceful enough. He said, as much as we have to condemn what Hamas did, blah, 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 without context. If you say that, you have to provide the context. It's unacceptable. At least he mentioned the word genocide. That's important. Because this is what all the other BRICS members and partners agree on. It is a genocide. And Anwar, in his speech yesterday, he explicitly condemned it as a genocide. But once again, Nima, considering this is a vast group of disparate nations from different continents, you have to proceed cautiously. And BRICS so far, they have been very cautious. From now on, they can be more forceful, but still being very diplomatic. It's the way to go. You cannot antagonize the empire on any issue frontally, because the empire will fall on you like a ton of iron bricks. You know? So it's better to have some swing. After all, we are in Brazil, land of the swing, right?
Pepe, it seems that they're learning as time goes by. They're getting better because they're talking about the political issues, geopolitical issues, the situation with Russia, Iran, Gaza. They were not that much talking about these things before.
No,
it's somehow
they were
changing. The tone is changing within
the tone has changed, and this was another one of the positives here in Rio. Before it started, many of us were very skeptical. Are they going to get deeper into all these geopolitical and geoeconomic issues? Yes, they did. Not only at the business forum, but today the leaders' interventions this morning. And what we don't know yet, they had lunch, which probably has finished by now, a long lunch where the rules were you can speak your mind freely, anything you want. And obviously, no media, no leaks. So that was great. So they probably had 3 hours to really get deep into all these issues among themselves with, you know, behind closed doors. That's excellent. This is what they need, because considering now that the war by Trump 2.0, finally, I think, you know, they start to see the writing on the wall. It's against all of them. All of BRICS, all of BRICS partners. The empire is against all of them, especially the three ones that we know very well. The three at the top, Russia, China, and Iran. The fact that Araghchi is here also immensely important, immensely. He was very, very forceful when he had his intervention this morning, obviously condemning in harsh terms the attack against the Iranian nation. Excellent. An enormous soft power problem, Nima, which is disgusting. There was a live feed at the start. So, for instance, we followed Lula's speech live. Okay, of course, there's no media inside the room, right? Then when Modi started speaking, the live feed vanished and didn't come back. So we couldn't follow live what all of them said. You know, we had snippets afterwards. This is a major, major tech issue. So now we have to blame the Brazilian government for that, which, by the way, some of the things. Yesterday, the accreditation system for people going to the business forum was a mess, an absolute mess. The meeting of the NTB as well was very, very messy. So they could take the offer. Roscongress in Russia, they are used to organizing this huge summits, especially St. Petersburg and Vladivostok. They offer their services to the Brazilians. The Brazilian says, no, we can do it by ourselves. No, you cannot. you're not competent enough to do it. And we saw for the past 2 days, we've been seeing this all the time, everywhere, you know. They managed to put 20,000 military in the streets. It's like, you know, Brazil is being invaded by Al-Qaeda or whatever, you know. But they cannot organize. So,
yeah, it's real, Pepe. It's real.
Yeah, it's real. And it's great to talk to people. I grew up here as well, so I understand the mentality. I love it. And I talk to a lot of people. And they say, that's how it works. You know. And on top of it, our taxes are paying for all these people. But it's good. It's a relaxed atmosphere. The foreigners who come here, they are like mind-blowing. You know, some of my new African friends, they are mesmerized by Rio. And of course, it's one of the, I would say it was one of the two or three top capitals of the Global South as a whole. So there is an idea, which is already floating and might be implemented, that Rio could become a sort of capital of a Global South summit. But for that, they're going to need Russian help to make it work properly. Like, it would be great because the scenically is fantastic. The first few days was raining. When the sunshine came out yesterday, everybody was like, wow. So it helped to have all these serious discussions in a beautiful setting like this one. It helps a lot. People are automatically energetically driven to find new solutions. And once again, the wonderful aspect of having all these business associations from all over the Global South, from Iran, from the Emirates, from Nigeria, from Egypt, etc., and women's chapters of BRICS. BRICS has women's chapters in each individual member state. They all met together with Lula. They had an hour and a half meeting, and some of them told me afterwards that it was immensely productive. And Lula mentioned that in his own speech yesterday. Okay, so he gives a lot of importance for these women's issues at development centers and business women's ideas circulating across the BRICS sphere. So it's great. This democratic, egalitarian component of BRICS you see reflected in everything. You know, it's very uplifting, quite different from how the Global North works. In fact,
what was the position on Syria, Pepe? Did they talk about Syria?
Yes, they do. I think I'm gonna have to read it because it's very complicated. Let me just find it here first. Just a sec. BRICS on Syria. Okay. I'll try to sum it all up because it's a lot. Well, they reaffirmed the obvious, right, Ima? Commitment to sovereignty, independence, unity, and territorial integrity of Syria, which obviously we know nothing of the above is happening at the moment. Peaceful and inclusive Syrian-led and Syrian-owned UN-facilitated political process. There is no political process in Syria at the moment, as we all know. Everything is still centralized by the former head chopper turned president, self-appointed president, right? They condemned the violence perpetrated on various Syrian provinces, but that's not condemned. Once again, condemned, that's not good enough, right? Bombing of churches, condemned the threat posed by foreign terrorist fighters. Well, that starts with the people supporting the former head chopper, now third president, the greater Idlib-Listan Salafi jihadi compound in the north. Now they are all over. And some of these people are in ministries in Syria, which is even more absurd. So just condemn them. Like, it's not enough. Risk of spreading of terrorists from Syria to regional countries. That's already happening. They're doing now the back and forth between Syria and Central Asia. and the Caucasus as well, because these are front lines against Russia. And obviously, the usual suspects are going to use this Syrian or crypto-Syrians or transported to Syrian Salafi jihadists to wreak havoc in the underbelly of Russia or in other borderlands of Russia apart from Ukraine. I'm not sure the Russians would have been very satisfied with this language, but it probably was the best that the Greeks could do. You know, they for them, Syria is not a number one priority. For instance, occupation of parts of Syria. They condemned strongly the occupation of parts of Syria. That's also not good enough, right? So what? What are they going to do? Are they going to send a BRICS army over there to dislodge these terrorists? So that was quite disappointing as part of the final declaration. They could have been more forceful. But once again, Nima, if you are more forceful, you have to go to the roots of everything that is happening in Syria. And we all know what that means. Just like if they would be more forceful on what's going on in Ukraine, they will have to do a Lavrov, go to the root causes of the problem. So they opted not to.
Pepe, you've mentioned the Central Asia and importance of what's going on even in Syria, but how about Azerbaijan? And they used Azerbaijan to attack Iran.
Nobody discussed Azerbaijan as far as I know, Nima, which is a huge problem. If they had to discuss Azerbaijan, they would have to discuss Turkey. And Turkey, they invited Turkey to be a member. Turkey said, we're thinking about it. So they skipped it. They did not talk about Azerbaijan, unfortunately. And I'm sure the Russians were trying to alert the others at the table. Look, you know what Azerbaijan is doing now? They're playing a double game with us. They are opening a front against us in the Southern Caucasus with a very dodgy alliance with Turkey and Israel. This is creating a series of new problems for us. And this is something that we should discuss. In the end, Nima, nothing. Unfortunately. Okay, so I think now our conversation, we are entering into what they did not discuss. They did not discuss a lot of stuff. First of all, because they had their hands full. Second, in terms of international politics, they focused on condemning the attacks on Iran. Obviously. Because it's a full member of BRICS. So this has to be condemned in the strongest terms. It was not condemned in the strongest terms. It was just condemned. But that's BRICS, you know, they advanced little by little. So the true advances were geo-economic and trade, definitely. Geopolitically, they preferred, okay, we have to be very, very careful, especially now with the circus ringmaster running out of control in Washington.
Pepe, how you? We know that Modi, he came to Brazil to participate in the summit. What does he want from? Does he have a clear mind when it comes to the participation to somehow collaboration with other countries within BRICS? And because India is somehow, when you look at their behavior, somehow tricky in the way that they're trying to manage the East and the West. And how was their participation in this summit? How did you find India's role?
We're going to know better between today and tomorrow, because there's going to be a huge Brazil-India business roundtable. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's tomorrow, not today. Then we're going to learn better. What we do know is that Modi wants a strategic partnership with Brazil, not only geopolitically, but especially geoeconomically. But we don't have details yet. And even if you look at Indian media, they are all in awe and in ecstasies because Modi was so well received here in Rio. The fact that his they are very good friends, they respect each other. Modi loves Lula, you know. But in practical terms, not so much so far. But this round, this business round table, then we're going to have a much better idea.
Yeah. And I don't know why they were somehow hesitant about condemning in a very aggressive, in my opinion, in somehow to condemn it the right way, because two of these nations, as you mentioned, Russia and Iran, are dealing with the conflict.
Exactly.
That one part is the United States together with Israel, United States together with Ukraine. How do they want? Because if something happens between the United States and China in Taiwan, how do they? There has to be some sort of talks among the nations to see what would be the reaction. Do they have any? Are they preparing some sort of document to react the way that they should react?
As far as we know, no. Because geopolitically, they I think the consensus among them geopolitically is that they have to be extremely careful at the moment. Because any, you know, it takes an adjective to infuriate the circus ringmaster. So they have to, you know, weigh their language very, very carefully, which is what they did with this final declaration. I would say over the next few months, this might change. Maybe not so much, because the chair of BRICS next year is going to be India. And as we know, Indian-Israel relations are very close. And as we know, the Indian ruling classes haven't made up their minds yet if they want to be part of Eurasia integration or to become a second-rate colony of the Anglo-Americans, more or less like they have been so far. So this is the true issue, you know, and there's no solution for the moment. I wonder if an Indian chairmanship is going to be more effective than the Brazilians. The Brazilians, considering that they worked only, to be fair, they worked only for 5 months for this summit, when the Russians last year worked non-stop for 10. And that's why Kazan was a huge success. But considering the Brazilians only worked for 5, I would say that it, geoeconomically in trade, as a, it was not so bad what came out here. And the fact that everybody that came here, especially the business people, organizations, etc., that was pretty, pretty good. India, we don't know. Really, we don't know, because we don't know their long-term vision of BRICS. If you talk to the Chinese, and the Chinese who know BRICS very well from the start as one of the founding members, some of the my new academic friends here, they were saying, maybe we should start thinking about the new two eyes in BRICS. Sorry, not India, but Iran and Indonesia. And some are even more radical to say, we should rename BRICS, but with India and Indonesia and without, with Indonesia and Iran and without India. Which goes to the key issue, which is the lack of trust by the Chinese leadership and by the Chinese intellectual community on India. This is an enormous problem, and no one can see how they're going to heal this wound. You know, this visit or this seduction by the G7, bringing Modi and Lula to the latest G7, this went down very badly in Beijing and in Moscow. They're trying diplomatically to, okay, maybe they had to do it, etc. But it was not a good move at all. And adds to their doubts about, okay, where India really stands. Nobody knows. And a lot of people inside India doesn't know. And critics of Modi, they said, of course, he's always hedging. And, you know, there are a lot of corrupt people around, but okay, the usual. But we don't know. We don't have a clear-cut vision on what India wants out of BRICS, like we have coming from China or from Russia or from the Southeast Asians. The Southeast Asians want BRICS as a solid body to help them in this transition towards less dependency of the American market and the American system, towards a system more integrated between them, China, the rest of Eurasia, and the global South as a whole. India, Anima, nobody knows where they're going. Not even themselves, probably.
Pepe, I think that the situation with tariffs is not going to end anytime soon. And Donald Trump would put a lot of pressure on these nations,
of course,
within BRICS and out of BRICS. But after all, do you find that Donald Trump would somehow back down or maybe try to connect with BRICS? I think the smart move on the part of the United States would be somehow participating and joining BRICS or doing something together with BRICS. Do you see that?
No, I don't think so. There won't be any sort of synergy between this American administration and BRICS. From the start, the clash was there. And it was announced even before. And the clash that was simmering during the previous administration exploded with the arrival of Trump. Trump already said that BRICS is dead, literally. Okay, he says a lot of stupidities. Sometimes he corrects himself, sometimes he doesn't. But the fact that he actually said that and the fact that he actually believes it, even though he has no clue whatsoever what BRICS is all about. First of all, because there are no Americans reporting correctly about what's going on here. I saw like 2 or 3 minutes of the Brazilian arm of CNN, and it doesn't even qualify as repulsive. It's beyond stupid. And they are covering. They have reporters here, you know, but they have no idea what's really happening. So this is for the Brazilian fifth column that thinks that CNN is actual journalism. So you can imagine in the U.S., they have absolutely no clue of what's being debated here and what's behind everything that's being debated here. So we cannot expect any sort of compromise between Trump 2.0 and BRICS, which once again points to how this final declaration had to be so diplomatic. Yeah. Because it's war, Nima. Sorry, this is a frontal war, and I'm glad that the main protagonists of BRICS have this very, very clearly.
Pepe,
Nima, I got
Brazil. Thank you so much, and so nice to see you here in Brazil.
Nice to see. I wish you had been here. But well, okay.
I couldn't go.
Not in that cage over there, but here at the Copacabana Palace, much, much cooler.
Te vejo.
Muito obrigado, querido.
Obrigado a você.
Thanks, all of you. And, you know, best.
Yeah, thank you, everybody who joined us.
By the beach in South America. I hope the vibes, I hope you get the good vibes and the sunshine and everything. Cheers.
See you soon, Pat.
Bye-bye. Ciao. Obrigado. Ciao.
Ciao.